Jordan Oliver gets it from the official, passes it into Owens, and she just dribbles it out. 2-1, and there's the buzzer. The Baylor Lady Bears are going to the Sweet 16 for the 12th tournament in a row, defeating Virginia Tech 90-48 in another dominant performance in San Antonio.
Baylor women move on, much like the Baylor men, but the Big 12 struggling in both tournaments. Only one team left on the men's side. How many Big 12 women's teams are left now?
Baylor and then two more play today, Iowa State and Texas. So the two others that played yesterday lost. It's kind of following the same path that the men's tournament did. Like Baylor wins and everybody else is losing right now in the second round. So it's not going great for the Big 12, like you said, in either tournament. So it's Baylor and everybody else is where we're at right now.
Emily Ryan of Central Plains plays for
yes,
Iowa State, freshman, so hopefully they do well. Who's Iowa State women got today?
Let me pull that back up here. I don't have that bracket right in front of me.
You don't have that memorized? You did sports. You don't remember anything you do in sports?
Yeah, it's like I do so many different things and things in
sometimes
between.
I don't either. People ask me, what's the weather going to be like? We used to read it all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
And we don't anymore, but I used to read it all the time, and I'd read it like five times at least every morning. And people say, what's the weather going to be like? I don't know. What do you mean? Oh, yeah, I read it, but I don't remember what it said. Yeah. So I know what you're talking
about. I'll call a coach and be like, oh, I got to pull your schedule up when I'm doing locker room chats. I'm like, I don't do all this off of memory, contrary to what some people might think, you know.
Right, exactly.
Iowa State plays Texas A&M. Yeah, that's right.
So A&M should have lost the first game. They got a very nice call that erased the N1 in that tournament, or they might have been done to the 15, and that would have been a gigantic upset on the women's side of things.
Yeah.
Is it just me, or does every official call a charge 95% of the time when it's a block? Like, I'm with Jay Billis. I don't agree with everything Jay Billis says, but I swear, every single time there's any kind of collision, it's almost always a charge.
It does seem like it's starting to lean that way, for sure.
Been that way all year long.
Yeah.
It's been that way all year
long.
Well,
yeah, this year, yeah.
It's been bad this year. I mean, guys that aren't even set, somehow it's a charge. You gotta establish position trying to get a block, and I've seen a few in the tournament where I've actually been surprised they haven't called it a charge, but it's like, I swear, every time a guy falls down, I'm like, all right, offensive foul, here she comes. I just hold my breath if it's going to be a team that I'm cheering for, which, all teams I cheer for are teams that already, lost in my bracket, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, it is. I think there's some confusion about how to administer that call.
It's something that needs to be handled in the offseason, I think, with the officials. But it's one of the hardest calls, and
it is.
It seems like they're what's the word I'm looking for? They are playing the side of they think it's safer to call a charge instead of a block, and that wipes out buckets and wipes out points. And I think people want to see points, so I would think you'd err on the side of block. Although, in fairness, if you're the one taking the charge and getting drilled, I would rather it be benefiting the guy that takes the charge, obviously.
Yeah.
Because I do say a lot of kids and a lot of people don't want to take charges because you're taking a chance to get hurt, hit your head on the back of the floor and concussion and this and that. So I do get that. So maybe that's why they want to reward kids that put their body in peril, maybe. But you still are supposed to have to be set, not just flop or slide in and not even, you're still moving and somehow it's called a charge. I've seen a lot of those this year.
Yeah.
Really bad calls. Really bad calls.
A lot of them that I'm seeing too are the ones where the shoulder's going down, right?
Yeah.
And but at the same time, it's like, the shoulder went down, but he jumped into him.
Right. Exactly.
And so it's
the defender jumped into him. Yeah.
Defender jumps in, and it's like because everybody's just always automatically like, right, the shoulder went down, so it's a charge.
No, not if it doesn't
make
contact.
That's not the case either, right?
Right. Exactly.
there's interpretation for a lot of different ways to call the block charge.
Yes, absolutely.
And again, I don't want to be the one that's making
the
call.
No, it's a tough one. it's a tough decision, no doubt. Let's see. The Cloud County Community College Board of Trustees voted yesterday to not renew the contract of college head men's basketball coach Jordan Altman at Cloud County Community College. Did you know that Jordan Altman is the son of Dana Altman?
I did know that.
Yeah. Dana Altman, whose team is still alive in the NCAA tournament, did not have a good record there with the Thunderbirds, did Dana Altman's son Jordan. 3-plus years at the helm, 32-73 was the overall record. Did host a Region 6 playoff game in 2019, did beat a couple of nationally ranked opponents, including number one ranked and defending national champion Hutchinson in his first year. So current assistant men's basketball coach Taylor Jones will assume the role of interim head coach for the conclusion of this season. And then while current Cloud County Instructor of Social Sciences Kevin Pounds will serve as an interim assistant coach the remainder of the year, the regular season has four games remaining, with a game today at Independence along with postseason competition. So Jordan Altman out before the season's over at Cloud County with the men's basketball team. Interesting.
Very.
Yeah.
That's it. For JUCO, that's kind of weird at to see a guy leaving before right. It's over, right?
Absolutely. All right.
But it is a later finish to their season, too. So if they want to go find a coach and start on time, as I'm processing that, it kind of makes sense now.
Right, right. Revised Final Four picks. You had all four ones in the Final Four, which was lazy and chalky just. I'm kidding. I had three ones and a two, and I told everybody that four ones are not going to make it to the Final Four because history proves that it won't happen. It only happened once, and it didn't happen. Unfortunately for me, the one that I thought might not make the Final Four is one that's still alive in Baylor, and Illinois was my national championship pick, and of course they lose second round. The kiss of death. When I any time I pick a team to win it all, they go out early. It doesn't matter.
And why is it early? Like
it's always early.
Like why is it not the
Elite Eight?
And I got lucky this year because that didn't happen to me. But it's like, man, it's give me at least three or four games
to have
some hope here.
I'm a number one overall pick because I had the number one pick in our player draft, and I picked the Illinois guy because I felt so good about Illinois, and he's out as well. So it was a double whammy for me. Yay. So thanks, Loyola Chicago. I'm still kicking myself I didn't pick them to beat Georgia Tech because I've seen Loyola play a couple times this year, and I remember thinking to myself, they're going to be tough. They're going to be tough out.
Yeah.
But anyway, so let's do our revised Final Four picks. You ready?
Yes.
So we both had Gonzaga, so we're going to stick with that.
Yeah.
We both had Michigan.
I have Michigan winning the whole thing. So.
Which could be.
I'll just keep it like that until it changes, right?
Right. I think Alabama-Michigan would be a great Elite Eight game. I thought LSU might knock off Michigan the other night. So I've got Michigan and Gonzaga. We'll stick with that, obviously. Obviously, you're going to stick with Baylor because you had all ones. I had Ohio State beating Baylor in Elite Eight, kiss of death. Ohio State lost first round. So I will go ahead and jump on the Baylor bandwagon now. Baylor looked so good against Wisconsin. They looked like the old Baylor, and I just didn't know if they would.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I didn't pick them. And I saw Ohio State, and I thought they were really good. And then, of course, they had one guy out with a concussion. That didn't help. But then they just didn't play very well. And that's what happens. You don't play well, you don't win in this tournament. Okay, so there we go. We got three ones. And then the region that's really messed up, I've got Syracuse going to Final Four now. I think the 2-3 zone, it's funny because when I was filling out my bracket, I'm like, Syracuse always makes a run as a double-digit seed. And I had them winning the first game, and I really was close to picking them beating West Virginia. And then I just was like, I think it was my Big 12 heart instead of my head, and I took West Virginia thinking, well, eventually West Virginia's going to make a run in this tournament. And then, of course, once the game started, and not even before, actually before the game started, I told my son, I said, I'm an idiot. Why did I pick West Virginia? He goes, what do you mean? The game hadn't even started yet. I said, son, they aren't going to win. I said, I'm looking at this matchup now. Now that you get to the matchup and you break it down, I'm like, West Virginia's not winning this game. They're not used to seeing a 2-3 zone that's this good with this much length, and Syracuse is making shots. And I just said, you're not used to seeing that type of zone. I don't think West Virginia is going to win, and they didn't. And I wish I had picked Syracuse in my bracket. I did not. There's one other game Loyola Chicago. It's like, I don't know why I didn't pick that over Georgia Tech. I'd seen them play more than Georgia Tech. And Georgia Tech even lost their top scorer out because of COVID. But I was like, well, then I change it. Then I'll kick myself in the butt because I changed it. So I left it, and that still blew up in my face. So my bracket has been blowing the smithereens like most people's. But I like Syracuse in that region because you've got, Loyola Chicago, and you got Houston, who should have lost to Rutgers. I mean, Rutgers blew that game, and Houston made a great comeback. They should have been out. And if so, you would have had three twos and a one already out. But that didn't happen. And then who's the other one down there at the bottom? I don't have the bracket in front of me. Houston and then
– Houston, Syracuse.
Syracuse, right. And then Loyola's against –
Oregon State.
And Oregon State, yeah. That'll be an interesting game.
Yeah, Houston plays Syracuse.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Okay, I thought I had that right.
That's right.
Yeah,
I'm taking Syracuse. I got Syracuse now winning that bracket as an 11 seed.
I want to pick. I'm just going to be different. I really honestly probably think Syracuse is going to do it, but I'm going to pick Loyola just to be different.
Loyola, okay. Yeah. Sounds good.
So because, I mean, they've got
nobody
history.
Believes in that 2 seed here in this studio.
No. And that's the 1 2 seed that I
thought
not believed
might
in
lose.
The whole.
Me too.
And they should have lost.
I agree.
Rutgers,
I agree.
I don't know what they were doing at the end of that game,
I
just
either.
Playing not to lose. And
I
it's
agree.
Like, you have nothing to lose. You're a 10
you're
seed.
The, you're the
play
underdog.
To win this
play
game
win. Yeah.
Like you have for 35 minutes.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. Okay.
So, yeah, I still don't buy Houston.
How about
they'll probably go to the national championship.
How about the Big 12 fans trolling Big 10 fans after day one about how great the Big 12 is and how bad the Big 10 is, and then after 24 hours later, then the Big 12 shutting their mouths. and I'm a Big 12 fan, but, I mean, it's like Bill Self said. They're asking about that great start to the tournament for the Big 12. He said, well, let's see how many we get to the second weekend. That's how we're going to be judged. Yeah. And the Big 12 flat-out failed miserably. Because the Big Ten had 9 schools. The Big Ten had 9, the Big 12 had 7, and only 2 of the 16 schools are going to the Sweet 16. Only Baylor, only Michigan. I mean, the Big Ten really underperformed. But the Big 12 in the second round, Texas Tech could have easily won their game. I mean, they should have. Mack McClung missed the front end of a 1-1. They missed a layup, and they missed a couple layups,
another
actually.
Layup.
they should have won that game. And I know they're lower seed. Oklahoma State.
And they had to fight back from like a 13-point deficit. But,
see, but
they had things going their direction.
But that's the problem with every Big 12 team that lost.
Exactly.
They dug themselves a hole early and never got out of it. Like, so West Virginia, they dug themselves a big hole early, came back, took the lead by 1, and then you know what happened after that? They took the lead by 1. All the momentum's on their side. Careless turnover, and then missed 2 free throws. Big guy got fouled, and he gave it right back.
And then you forget you got to finish.
Right, exactly.
And that happens a lot.
Right.
For both of those teams in particular, for Texas Tech and West Virginia, it's like we fought all the way back here, but we couldn't finish.
It probably too big a hole. They spent all that energy and couldn't finish it. I mean, I thought Tech should have taken a timeout because they had nothing going, and they had like 20 seconds when they got the ball. They had nothing going with 10 seconds on the far sideline. McClung couldn't get the ball. I couldn't believe Chris Beard didn't call a timeout. But you know what? They still got a
That's
good
what I was
shot
talking
somehow.
About too. The guy's just pounding the ball into the
somehow
floor.
He got all the way to the rim,
somehow
which I couldn't
found
believe.
An opening to the lane.
Because that was just a one-on-one basketball. I couldn't believe he got to the rim, and then he shot it too hard. So Texas Tech should have won. West Virginia, I don't know if they should have won, but once they got up by 1, they had a chance to win. They were a 3 against an 11. So those, you know, Texas, obviously, a 3 against a 14 should have won. I mean, Abilene Christian had no business winning that game. I mean, defensively they did, but their shooting percentages were awful, and they were exposed against UCLA. So Texas completely, I mean, Texas had every chance in the world to, it's like they were trying to throw that game, I swear.
Mm-hmm.
That was horrible. And then what Big 12 team, I mean, of course, KU got rolled. More on that in a moment.
Oklahoma State got down there about 14
and a half.
Yeah,
way too big
State,
of a hole. Know? Came all the way back, cut at the 3. You know, I really don't know if Oklahoma State is better at Oregon State. Because you take Cade Cunningham away, and Oklahoma State's not that great. But still, that was a higher seed opportunity. Mm-hmm. So West Virginia, Texas, obviously, but West Virginia, Oklahoma State, those two were much higher seeds and really should win.
Mm-hmm.
And then Texas Tech had every chance to win. And is that all the Big 12 teams then? Kansas got blown
Baylor
out.
And KU.
And Baylor, yeah. Oklahoma against Gonzaga. I mean, they gave a good fight. But let's talk about KU. I know you probably discussed this yesterday, but listen, I think overreacting at KU's loss is somewhat silly, and here's why. Because the people that I see that are freaking out, overreacting, didn't watch KU basketball very much this year.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell. I can tell immediately with people's asinine comments, and that's what they are.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell right away that they have not watched much KU basketball all year, if at all, until the tournament, or didn't even watch the tournament game, just saw the final score. And that's fine. You can do whatever you want. You get the freedom in this world to post anything you want on social media. You just know there could be consequences at some point in time. And if you listen to this show on a regular basis, you know we've been talking all year long about KU and their deficiencies. This KU basketball team is the least talented that Kansas has had in all the time Bill Self has been there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even really that close. People want to bring up the 2012 team. I keep seeing people want to compare that. I'm like, no. The 2012 team had an All-American in Thomas Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had a 2012. They had Thomas Robinson, who was a first-team All-American. They have Jeff Withey, who was a draft pick. And they had Tyshawn Taylor, a true point guard.
Yeah.
Kansas didn't have a true point guard this year.
No.
If Devon Dotson plays, it's different. But KU, honestly, I think Bill Self, he got the most he could out of this team.
Absolutely.
And people say, well, he's got all these McDonald All-Americans. Tell me what McDonald All-Americans he has. See, this is the other lazy part of people that don't follow KU basketball and don't know what they're talking about. Even K-State fans out there, I'm talking to some of you as well. You don't have any clue. You just automatically go, well, KU's got a whole bunch of McDonald All-Americans. Go ahead. Name the McDonald All-Americans on the KU roster right now.
Does he have any?
There's one. David McCormick.
David McCormick. I thought he was, but
David
I was
McCormick.
Like, he's not.
Mitch Lightfoot.
People don't
Mitch
remember
Lightfoot.
That. But.
Mitch Lightfoot shouldn't be seeing tons of minutes. Okay? No. That's the only bigs they got.
Yeah.
Okay? Their point guard is a defensive stopper who isn't a good shooter, who had to be a point guard, and that falls on Bill Self. He didn't have somebody ready to go behind Dotson. Harris has done okay, but those guys were not McDonald's All-Americans. No. Garrett was a lower recruit and turned into a great player, defensively especially. Christian Brown is not a McDonald's All-American. Jalen Wilson, not a McDonald's All-American. Ochai Agbaji was a complete late bloomer that was off the radar.
Mm-hmm.
I've just given you Kansas's starting lineup. Bryce Thompson, was he a McDonald's All-American? He might have been. So there might be two. There might be two.
Yeah.
That could be. So there might be two. And you may say, well, that means you're automatically great. You're not. I mean, there's teams that have McDonald's All-Americans, and they lose to Oral Roberts and lose to Loyola Chicago, for crying out loud. We've seen that, right?
Yeah.
So you can't automatically say, well, they have a whole bunch of all McDonald's All-Americans. How could they overachieve? If you watch Kansas this year, they had no shot blocker. They only have one guy that can score in the paint. That was McCormick. That's it. They had very spotty three-point shooting. Very spotty. Christian Brown and Agbaji were extremely inconsistent this year. When they were on, they were on. And when they're off, they're off. And you throw Jalen Wilson in that category as well. We said this all year long, that Kansas would have to get the right matchups, which is possible, to make a deep run in the tournament. They would need to get the right matchups. I knew before this tournament began USC was a bad matchup. I can prove it. Look at my bracket. I had USC beating KU. And I'm really, honestly, not surprised KU got ran out of the building. I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm surprised they lost by 34. Sure. But I didn't think Kansas had much of a chance of winning this game. I did not. I didn't before the tournament. And then when you get closer to the game and all the COVID-19 issues with Kansas, I was like, there's no way Kansas is winning this game. Because you know who, and I knew, and I read stuff leading up to the game too, and Brian Haney and I had even talked about it. What's the one team that beat Kansas twice this year? Texas.
Texas.
And what does Texas have that USC has? A lot of size, length, and athleticism, and big arms, wingspans. Now Texas, you multiply that. USC has the guy that's going to be a top three pick in the NBA draft, mm-hmm. plus his brother who's not bad at 6'10". Now they got all the size in the world. That's better than Texas. So you tell me again why KU is going to beat USC? On top of that, I know you can say, well, COVID-19 is an excuse, right? Listen, USC and the whole Pac-12 has proven to be underseeded. Doug Gottlieb was saying it all year long. He said people don't stay up to watch games on the West Coast. They just automatically think because Arizona and UCLA are not having great years and Washington's not good and Oregon, had some early losses. He goes, and I think they had COVID-19 pause as well. They automatically just think the Pac-12 is not any good. And Doug Gottlieb has been saying this, and he lives on the West Coast. He's been saying it all year long. The Pac-12 will be underseeded. And he said Oregon is the biggest one that is completely underseeded. And here we are. Oregon is going to play USC in the regional semifinal. USC is a 6. Oregon's a 7. I had Oregon winning the first. I should have picked them over. I think I might have picked them over Iowa 1. I actually filled out 2 brackets. I might have had him over Iowa in 1. I should have picked him. But I knew I told my son he had Iowa and Gonzaga. And he said, I think Iowa can beat Gonzaga. I told my son, I said, the one team that can beat Iowa in that bracket I watch out for is Oregon. Mm-hmm. Because they're athletic and they're long. And this is what USC is. And then look what Oregon State's done. And then UCLA's got talent. They just underachieved during the year. And they were a play-in team. The Pac-12 has proven to be legit. So Kansas, people say, well, they're overseeded. No, they were not overseeded. They were where they should have been. Based on their resume and what Bill Self got out of this team, they were seated about right, a 3 or a 4. Maybe they could have been a 4, whatever. But it was a bad matchup. It was a really horrible, horrific matchup. And then you add in that USC can make a whole bunch of threes, which, by the way, guys weren't making a ton of threes in the first half. It was Isaiah Mobley. It was the second half when all of a sudden everybody on the bench and everybody was making threes, and Kansas's spirit was broken because there was a lot of wide-open threes. So USC played great, and they played their best game of the year, and KU probably played their worst game of the year. So the combination equals what? A blowout. So then immediately people want to say, well, Bill Self and KU, they can't win in the tournament. They made the Final Four in 2018, And the year after, they lost, the last time we had a tournament, 2019, lost to Auburn, who made it all the way to the Final Four. Okay? So Kansas was a 4 against a 5 a few years ago. That's a coin flip that can go either way. The year before, they were a 2, beat Duke in Omaha, went to the Final Four. That, so the last tournaments, Kansas has lost in the second round, and before that, they made it to the national semifinals. You want to sit here and go, all I'm worried about recent history right now. That's all I'm worried about. Last year, they would have been number one overall seed. Now, if KU would have played last year and lost in the second round to an 8 or a 9, I totally understand this. Like, yeah, oh, my yeah. God, Kansas, 3 straight years, they've been a high seed, and they've been out in the second round, couldn't make the second weekend. I get that. But last year, we didn't have a tournament. Mm-hmm. And then I saw somebody, here's another crazy comment. I believe that losing like this to USC this year is worse than not getting to play last year in the tournament. You're crazy. You're crazy. What did you expect out of this Kansas team? All right? No. What's worse? Losing by 34 in the second round to a team that was favored to beat you, by the way, mm-hmm. or not getting to play as the number one overall seed in the tournament? Oh, my God. Do you really need to think about that? The worst thing was not getting to play. You were the favorite. Yeah. Now, I don't think Kansas would have won it all last year. I still think they wouldn't have because I know the history of Kansas. I would have bet the field against Kansas, no question. I would always take the field against anybody in this tournament, even Gonzaga.
Yeah.
I'll still take the field. So Kansas lost to a team that was a 2-point favorite. They lost to a team with NBA talent. What NBA talent does Kansas have on their roster right now? Agbaji, at best, would be a late second-round pick, at best. There is no – David McCormick's not going to play in the NBA. And by the way, David McCormick, let's point this out. David McCormick, Kansas, I don't know how many times they had pick and rolls where they could have lobbed it up. If McCormick could sky or was taller, they would have had so many dunks this year, just like they had Udoka last year. But they never either – they didn't have the guards to throw in the ball in the right spot on alley-oops, or that McCormick didn't have the timing and the athleticism to jump up and make these great plays. Udoka could do that. And so you take away Udoka and Devon Dotson. Kansas didn't really replace those with, you know, great, obviously, All-American players. McCormick stepped up. McCormick had a solid year. Don't get me wrong. But listen, we knew this all year long. We talked about every single week, I think, on the show. What's Kansas's deficiencies? What does Kansas have to do to win? Kansas, in order to win, has to. McCormick has to play well inside and stay out of foul trouble. That's the only low post threat they have, right? And we said they got to make threes. And if they don't make threes, and they don't get anything from McCormick, or they don't get one or the other, they're going to be really, really challenged offensively. We saw this team struggle. They scored 18 points in the first half against TCU at home. This team had all kinds of issues offensively. So when McCormick was going really well, they looked like a much better team. Now, you put up – now, and this is common sense. You put up a David McCormick, a guy that doesn't exactly – he's not a high flyer, okay? He's not super athletic. He's a solid, good player. Don't get me wrong. He's improved quite a bit, all right? David McCormick, you put him up against guys that have long wingspans, he doesn't do well. And we knew it going in. And now you're going to put him up against the Mobley brothers and expect him to score 22 like he did against Eastern Washington? No way, Jose.
Yeah.
He finished with 4 points. And it's not on David McCormick. You know, Agbaji missed a ton of – he had open looks. He couldn't knock him down this tournament. All right? And Marcus Garrett's not a good outside shooter. Christian Brown is very streaky. And remember, he's still only 19. And Dejon Harris is a very good guard. I think he's going to be their point guard. And he's still a little bit timid offensively. I mean, the question always was, where's Kansas going to get their offense? But here's where they're up against it. When you look at this team, I mean, okay, it was already challenged offensively. But then you go into the tournament, they were playing good ball, and then COVID hit. Bad timing. McCormick in the Big 12 tournament, they got to withdraw. So they couldn't keep that momentum going. Then they go against Eastern Washington and could have easily lost that game. Luckily, Harris and Garrett made some threes. McCormick played great. McCormick got there the day of the game or the day before. Okay, they're lucky that worked out because McCormick didn't practice all week long. And then Jalen Wilson didn't practice and got there the day of the game against USC. And you could tell there he was nowhere near what he needed to be. And that was really an unfair spot for him to be in. He hadn't practiced all week. He had to get there the day of the game. He had a very, very light shoot around or practice. And then you put him in the game, which I don't blame Bill Self. You put him out there, you need him. But to expect Jalen Wilson to do what David McCormick did is insane. Okay, so Kansas was short Wilson. They were short a player. That's a key player for this team. He's a really good rebounder. You need that against USC. And so to me, it wasn't that hard to figure out going in this game. I thought USC was going to win by double digits. I did. I told my son. You can ask him. I thought USC was going to win by double digits. So when USC was up 19 at halftime, I was not shocked.
No.
I wasn't. Because every time Kansas had the ball, they had to labor to score. And once USC got going inside with the Mobley brothers and then Isaiah Mobley pulling the floor and making threes, that opens everything else up. And then Kansas was just like, you know, on their heels. This didn't surprise me. And that's why I don't think it should be overreaction central. Kansas, this team overachieved. They did. They overachieved. They were not nearly as athletic as USC. They had a bad matchup. And it seems like Kansas always goes up against a team that makes a whole bunch of threes, right, and shoots a high percentage. And maybe there's something to that that Kansas got changed. I don't know if that's pure bad luck or what. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's USC's three-point shooting to beat Kansas the other night. It was the Mobley brothers that beat Kansas the other night. Mm. And Kansas had nobody even close to being as good as either one of those guys. And that opened up everything for everybody else. Go look at the stats. Okay, Isaiah Mobley was 4 for 4 in the first half, three-pointers, I believe. Yeah. I mean, he was the guy that killed you. And then the second half, when you're already down 20, that's when they start making other threes. You take away all of USC's threes, take away the 7 after Isaiah Mobley. That's what, 21 points? They still win by 14 or 13. USC clearly was the better team. And I knew it, and anybody that watched both teams play this year knew it. And I thought Kansas would have to muddy it up, and it'd have to be in the 50s or 60s, low 60s of any chance. And then to expect Jalen Wilson to play great, you needed Agbaji, you needed Brown and Garrett to play out of their minds, because you kind of figured McCormick would have been neutralized offensively, and he was. So,
yeah, I filled out my bracket, and I don't analyze it when I fill it out a lot because I didn't see USC play this year, right? And so I'm like, whatever, I moved Kansas to the Sweet 16 and had them losing the next round to Iowa. And obviously neither one of those teams are still alive. But as I got closer to it, it's like you saw what the Groves brothers did to them, and they're not long. I mean, they're long, but they're not athletic like the Mobley brothers, right?
And they had problems with those guys.
They had nobody really else around them, right? Like it was the Groves brothers, and that was it. And so in this game, I was like, yeah, I'm regretting having Kansas on my bracket after I saw what happened in the first round and actually understood what the matchup was going to be like for KU.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Swissetti, I get it. And you got to defend the bigs, too, and they didn't do that either.
So. Right. No, they didn't. And it was just a colossal
blowout. It's not about
blowout.
Just having bigs that you have to go up against offensively. You also have to go defend those guys.
Yes. And it's difficult
to do when you don't have the personnel to do it.
David McCormick and Mitch Lightfoot against the Mobley brothers was an unfair fight. and most people knew it. People that follow basketball closely knew it before the game, and then after the game you realized what we already knew.
Yeah.
And that's why you shouldn't freak out because Kansas lost as a 3-6. That 6 was really good and actually was the better team, and it really wasn't close. And I think those teams could play 10 times. I think USC wins 8. I do.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe 9, to be quite honest with you. If anybody says otherwise, I think you're really looking through your crimson and blue glasses. It's time for K-State in Focus. Our focus on Kansas State athletics, brought to you by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. Well, we finally have some good news for K-State men's basketball fans, right, Dusty?
Yes.
Finally.
I never in my life, I was talking to my guys yesterday, I was like, I don't know that I ever thought I would be, like, overly excited that Mike McGurl.
I know.
Mike McGurl is coming back to K-State basketball to take advantage of his second senior season. Well, I was just like, they've lost so many players over the last few years, and it's like, yeah. Mike McGurl, we got him back.
All right, for people that are tuning in a little bit late or haven't been able to stay on top of this, because I think what happens is once your team is out of it, or if your team's out of it, you focus on the NCAA tournament, you might not follow your team as closely. You're not worried about the off the season so much. You just worry about the team that's on the floor. But to update some people out there, Kansas State, who have they all lost?
They have lost. Antonio Gordon was first, and then Rudy Williams was shortly after that. And right after Rudy Williams was Dejuan Gordon. Mm-hmm. And then Monday it would have been, Joe Petrakis said, I'm leaving. Mm-hmm. Now, as I talked about yesterday, everybody's like, well, he doesn't mean anything. He averaged like 4 minutes and 2 points a game. There's three other scholarship players that you lost. So there's a total of 4 scholarships that have to be filled now for K-State. I guess one of them's filled by Mike McGurl coming back.
But right.
Because that would have been off the books normally.
Right.
So I guess they probably have 3 scholarships technically to fill with those guys leaving, because Mike McGurl would have left too. But actually they're still back to 4, because that would have been 5 scholarships without McGurl. So, but yeah, those 4 guys have left.
two guys, obviously, that were only sophomores in Dejuan and Antonio Gordon that I think people were maybe looking forward to keeping some continuity with the team.
Right.
Obviously, Antonio Gordon was too far gone, it looks like. That
one was expected. Antonio Gordon was expected. Rudy Williams, I don't think many people really knew about that one. But Dejuan Gordon is the one I think that surprised me because, I mean, he played quite a bit.
And I guess there were some rumblings about it, but, you know, it wasn't anything that had taken the kind of traction that Antonio Gordon did, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the hot thing that's out there now on social media for K-State fans because they have – you know, apparently not a lot to talk about right now, is that somehow Brad Underwood's going to come to Kansas State. I laughed hysterically when I've read a few of these. I had put a response and then I deleted it. I was like, what's the point? It's just, I'm not going to win in this thing. Brad Underwood's not coming to Kansas State, right? Unless he's fired.
The only thing is
Illinois is not going to fire Brad Underwood.
Yeah, I mean,
they won the Big Ten tournament. They were a number one seed. Just because they lost in the second round to a Loyola Chicago, there are a few people, believe it or not, Illinois wanting him fired, and some want to replace him with Porter Moser, who just beat him head to head, which is convenient. Yeah. It's like, are you kidding me? They had an unbelievable season, and he has recruited pretty well in his first few years there too.
Yeah, I mean, there's only one other way that he would leave, and if it's like he got tired of the alums and boosters telling them how to recruit, basically, is, I think, the only other way. Because, I mean, a lot of people didn't, of course, he had sanctions probably coming at Oklahoma State, so he got out real fast, right? Because he knew what his assistant coach was doing, although he didn't know what he was doing, right?
Yes, of course. And then the next coaching staff has to deal with it.
Nobody was really expecting that quick of a move from Oklahoma State, but then once all the stuff comes out about that, and you know the background now,
right?
It makes sense why he left so fast there in Stillwater. But, but I mean, no, those fans like that, they're just blow my mind on the Illinois side of it, right? Because they lost, they went Porter Moser.
Right.
And it's like, dude, you know where Illinois was before Brad Underwood.
You weren't getting one seed, I can tell you that. You weren't even playing in the Big Ten semifinals in the tournament, let alone the championship. Mm-hmm. And this was a tough year on top of it all. And it's just, it's amazing to me how people just immediately forget everything about what year we're going through and all the issues you had to deal with, players and coaches, with COVID-19, all the testing and the protocols. Our focus on Kansas State Athletics today brought to you in part by Heineken Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. Okay, so just for fun to entertain this little discussion that people have been having. First of all, I always think that people think whatever school that they promote and that they follow, they always think higher of their school and their team than it really is looked upon outside of your university and outside of your fandom. Does that make sense? Like, I think KU men's basketball, you know, they can probably comfortably say, hey, there would be a lot of guys that would die to be the new head coach at KU if Bill Self walked away. I think that's probably accurate. Now, who wouldn't want to come and coach at Kansas? That's probably accurate. Now, if you got a whole bunch of sanctions over your head and probation, then guess what? You might not want to be coming there. I get that. But I think I think those blue bloods are exceptions. But I think, you know, when it's your team and your school and you're looking to find somebody to replace a guy that you want out, and that's clearly the case with K-State, some fans, they're tired of Bruce Weber. They want him out. He's lost a lot of kids when it comes to his recruiting classes here recently. We just documented that, and I get it. I do. But it's just immediately like when the K-State football coaching job came about, it's like some of the names that were thrown out there by some people that actually even cover K-State were just mind-bogglingly crazy. And I was like, do you understand where you're located? First of all, do you understand? Put yourself in the shoes of a prospective high-ranking or highly thought-of coach. All right? Just once for people that want to spew all kinds of information on Twitter and social media. Just stop for a second and say to yourself, if I were Brad Underwood, if I were Brent Venables, right? If I were whoever it may be, if I was Brad Underwood, let's start with that one. If I was Brad Underwood and I'm in Illinois and I'm in the Big Ten, which is considered better than the Big 12 right now, even though they both have failed miserably in the tournament, and I just came off a season where I was a top five team, number one seed, I also won the tournament championship. I did it during COVID. I've got good recruiting classes coming in. I've got good kids now that are going to be coming back. And I have a great recruiting area Obviously, Chicago and that area, is there's some great players in that area. If you can keep some of those in state Illinois. And, oh, yeah, I have an airport. I have access to everything. And I know Manhattan has an airport, but it's a little bit different. And you look at where I'm located, so forth and so on. And, oh, yeah, Illinois broke the bank to fly me from Stillwater, and they identified me, wanted me, and paid me handsomely. If you're Brad Underwood, do you really think K-State's even on his radar right now? I'd say no.
Not based on all that.
I mean, no. I mean, the only way it's
K-State's
on,
always on his radar, but not in that
not,
way.
Not as a head coach. Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't want to offend people, but I'm sorry. Illinois is a much better program than K-State right now.
Well, absolutely.
I mean, if you can't come up with that. And so now maybe there's extenuating circumstances. Maybe there are things that are really driving him nuts that he would leave, or maybe somehow get fired, or he's upset the wrong boosters. There might be stuff that I'm not aware of. But listen, Brad Underwood, I would guess, would be gobbled up by other universities that had openings or even don't have openings. Let's remember this for a second. K-State doesn't have an opening right now. Bruce Weber is the head coach at Kansas State University. All signs point to he'll be back next year. So first of all, before you talk about Brad Underwood coming to Kansas State, you don't even have an opening. So if there is an opening, Brad Underwood's also employed by Illinois.
Yeah.
If Kansas State, listen, I think the ship has sailed. K-State had their opportunity to get Brad Underwood if they really wanted him. They could have collected all the donor money and so forth and so on if they really wanted him. And we know the whole John Curry thing and of course, the extenuating circumstances with Martin and him and this and that, and Underwood was on his staff. I get all that. But at some point, whether it's the boosters or whoever, the boosters, the high-paying people, usually have the pull at universities. We know this. That's why you have all these buyouts getting paid by donors, big donors. And that's why you get guys that are overpaid coming in, because the donors step up and pay the money because they want their football program to be great, or a basketball program, whatever it may be. But listen, the only way you're going to get Brad Underwood at Kansas State is if Illinois is dumb enough to fire him. That's my opinion.
That's
the only way you're getting Brad Underwood. If they're dumb enough to fire him, or they're dumb enough to upset him so badly that he walks away. That's the only way he's coming to Kansas State. Now, maybe somebody has information I'm not aware of, but I mean, he's making so much money at Illinois. Kansas State can't pay him more than that. Well, maybe, I take that back. They can. They just got to get the donors to pony up. Yeah. You can, but then you get in a bidding war between Kansas State and Illinois. Who do you think's going to win that bidding war to keep Brad Underwood or bring out Brad Underwood
if
in?
If that's all it's about.
K-State's going to lose that every time.
Yeah.
So I guess the question is, on the surface, why would Brad Underwood go from Illinois to K-State?
Yeah.
And I would say there is no reason.
No.
There's no reason whatsoever. Now, maybe 4 years from now, K-State has an opening, Brad Underwood's not going, things aren't going with Illinois, or they're put on probation, or there's a violation, which, if you're K-State, do you want to hire a coach that's run from two schools? Would you want to hire Brad Underwood? Some people would, but some people would be like an administration going, I don't know.
Yeah, I would want circumstances on the second time around before,
right,
you know, vet
sure.
it right,
right.
Unlike what KU did with Les Miles.
Exactly, right.
Do the right vetting and understand why he left. But,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, when people talk about Brad Underwood K-State, I think it's a pipe dream. That's what I think.
I feel like that too. There's a lot of things that I've heard over the last couple of weeks behind the scenes that I'm not sharing with anybody because I was instructed not to share it with anybody. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I always say on any of this, right, is until Bruce Weber is no longer the coach at K-State,
there's no hope.
And then B, until somebody is introduced as the next head coach at K-State, all that is rumor, all that is just
conjecture.
Somebody decided to make something up sometimes.
Right.
All that is just, it's, nothing matters about it until it actually happens. That's the way I look at all those things.
And if you think K-State's the only one that would be interested in Brad Underwood if, for some reason, he walked away, you would get in a bidding war with other schools. And it's like, well, he used to coach at K-State. That doesn't mean he automatically is going to come to K-State.
Yeah.
I mean, if you really wanted to
And the pipe dream coaches, usually you talk about know your program,
yes.
right? Usually those pipe dream coaches are the ones that played and coached at K-State before.
Yes.
Brent Venables
yes.
was your example in
right.
football.
Mm-hmm.
Brad Underwood is from McPherson, Kansas, played at Kansas State,
right.
coached at Kansas State.
Right.
Brent Venables is from Solana, Kansas, played at Kansas State, coached at Kansas State.
Correct.
Gary Patterson is from Roselle, Kansas, mm-hmm. played at K-State, didn't coach at K-State.
Right.
But Gary Patterson is another name, right?
Right.
They're all those kind of guys,
mm-hmm.
but they're all bigger and better and greener pastures,
yes.
right?
So why would they come and make a parallel or a lower
Brent's
move?
Brent's probably at the top of that list. If he was going to have a head coaching job,
he would have had it already if he wanted it.
He was pretty content, I think, on Dabo Swinney's staff.
I would agree. When you're making $3 million or more as a defensive coordinator, you'd probably be pretty happy. You don't have to deal with all the media because you're not the head coach.
Yes.
So, yeah, he's got a great job. So what I'm saying is, once again, everybody thinks this job's so attractive. Why don't you go talk to Brent Venables one-on-one if you can get that meeting? Yeah. Ask Brad Underwood. I mean, I'm not saying they don't think it's a good job. It's just that they know it's not their job that they want.
Yeah.
But maybe there's something that we don't know with the Brad Underwood thing. But if I'm Illinois, I would wait this thing out. Unless they've got sanctions coming down and problems with recruiting and who knows what else, illegal bribery. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe there's something there.
We don't know all the behind the
scenes. And if that's the case, do you really want that guy coming to K-State? If he's cheating?
Well, on that part of it, definitely not.
So then, so what's the point from that angle, too, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, our focus on K-State brought to you by Heineck Electric in Beloit and by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit. We wrap up the show with the Chiefs. The Chiefs have been missing out some free agents, but they did re-sign Daniel Sorensen. Daniel Sorensen has been signed. He was a free agent. He's an important piece of the defense. He's kind of the, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of an enforcer on defense. Obviously, he knows some big hits that he can lay out there. He's multidimensional. He can play, you know, he can kind of play a small linebacker, you can play a safety, really either side. You can play free or you can play strong. But Daniel Sorensen is a 1 year, $2.46 million deal to come back to the Chiefs, fully guaranteed. I think that's a pretty cheap deal, so that's probably a good thing for the Chiefs and bringing Sorensen back. That makes sense. Trent Williams, the Chiefs are interested in him as left tackle. Stories have come out here in the last few days. Trent Williams was very, very close, he says, to going to Kansas City. But he gave Kyle Shanahan every opportunity in the world to keep him. Kyle Shanahan's the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. And Trent Williams has known the Shanahan family, including Kyle's dad, Mike, for a very long time. And so Trent Williams basically said, just like you kind of would be in the regular job world, like you got a really good relationship with your boss, right? And you're really happy in your job, but somebody comes courting you and can give you or says they can give you as much or more money and maybe a better opportunity to do this or do that, and they really want you and you're flattered, and you go back to your boss and say, listen, you know, if I ever get a, or maybe you've already said it early on, if I ever get an offer somewhere else, I'll always allow you to match it. All right, I'll always give you the final chance before I decide to go. And that happens in the real world many times. Well, that's what happened with Trent Williams. Trent Williams he thought he was very close to going to Kansas City. He didn't know if the Niners would step up at the end. The Chiefs are very aggressive. Trent Williams is 32. He'd be a left tackle. He's all-pro left tackle. He wants to play until he's 40, and he would be protecting Patrick Mahomes' blind side, of course. That was the goal. The Chiefs are really aggressive going after Trent Williams, and Trent Williams says that he called Kyle Shanahan or texted him and said, hey, you know, basically, this is, you know, let me know. We've come to that moment in time where you guys got to decide if you want me or not. Step up. You got the last shot to match this or do this. And guess what? Kyle Shanahan, within a few minutes, called Trent Williams and said, we'll get it done. And they did. So the Niners kept Trent Williams, and the Chiefs were very close to getting Trent Williams. And if not for the relationship between Kyle Shanahan and Trent Williams would be your left tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs. And he's revealed that information here recently. And I think it is, you know, we hear about all this disloyalty, right? We see the whole thing with Deshaun Watson, you know, getting upset with the Houston Texans organization 6 months after he signed an extension. Texans not doing him right. We've seen what happened in the NBA. You guys get, you know, they're discontent. They want to, they force their way out. It is refreshing when you see an organization, even though it's at the expense of the Chiefs, because if you're a Chiefs fan listening right now, you're like, well, come on, man. I that's too bad they had that relationship. I wish they didn't, because Trent Williams would be a Chief right now. True. But that isn't that what you want if you're a Chiefs fan? Like, if you've got a guy like Trent Williams, I'm trying to come up with an example. Let's just say Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce, let's say he's a free agent next year. He's not, but let's say he was. And Travis Kelce, he's a free agent. He wants to get courted by people, and other teams come to the table. But Kelce says, hey, I started my career in Kansas City. They gave me my first chance. They drafted me, and the Hunt family's been great to me, and Andy Reid's been great to me. And I love my teammates. I love Kansas City. I've got my roots here. I'm going to give them every chance to match what's out there. And if they can't match it, then I have to either take less and stay in Kansas City, or I'll have to walk and take that better offer. That would be a comparison for Chiefs fans to relate to. So Trent Williams, I hear a lot of people, of course, Chiefs fans, and once again, you always think the grass is always greener at your university or at your pro football team or team you cheer for, right? So you're like, well, why would Trent Williams stay in San Francisco when he could come to Kansas City? He could win a ring in Kansas City, and he'd be with Mahomes, who's the best quarterback in the league, so forth and so on. Well, it still comes down to what you're comfortable with. Trent Williams is very comfortable with the Shanahan family. Kyle Shanahan is his head coach. He has a great relationship with them. He also wouldn't have to, you know, move all his stuff to Kansas City. He can stay in San Francisco. But also, the 49ers, remember who the Chiefs played in the Super Bowl 2 years ago? It was the 49ers. So when you say that the Chiefs have a much better chance of getting a ring, why didn't Trent Williams come to Kansas City if the money was the same? First of all, he would have to create and start new relationships at the age of 32 in Kansas City. Even though he might be excited, that might not be something he really ready to do right now. Sounds like he was willing to do it if the Chiefs were the highest bidder. And so he decided to allow the Niners to match. And they did. But also, the Niners were just absolutely destroyed by injuries last year. Their tight end, one of the wide receivers, running backs were hurt, offensive line, their quarterback, Garoppolo, who's not a great quarterback but solid, he was hurt most of the year. And if the Niners get healthy, if they get healthy, they should be right back fighting for supremacy in the NFC if they get healthy. And they re-signed their left tackle, Trent Williams. So the Niners went to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. They were 13-3 that year. So when we sit here, it's easy, once again, as Chiefs fans, well, we've been to Super Bowl 2 straight years. We were 1-1, and we're going to go to a third straight Super Bowl, which is not guaranteed at all. You say, well, there's a better chance for Trent Williams to make the Super Bowl with the Chiefs, when honestly, the percentages show there's a better chance that Williams will make the Super Bowl with the Niners and the Chiefs, because teams don't go to the Super Bowl 3 years in a row. The Patriots have done it. It rarely happens. All right? The Bills, didn't they do it? But it just rarely happens. So if you play percentages, it really actually, the Niners would have just as good or better chance to make a Super Bowl this year after having a really rough year last year due to injuries. So Trent Williams was very close to being a Chief, but because of relationships, he stayed. And perhaps that's why Daniel Sorensen took $2.46 million, and he could have got maybe more somewhere else, and he stayed in Kansas City. So you can be mad as a Chiefs fan about that relationship costing you a Pro Bowl left tackle, but you certainly, if the roles are reversed, you would want to say what? Where's the loyalty, man? Come on, man. The Chiefs have missed out on some wide receivers. They obviously are not happy with what they have at wide receiver or content. Well, Mecole Hardman right now is your number two wide receiver. That worries me. The number three receiver right now would be Byron Pringle. I'm okay with that, although he's had some injury problems here and there. I'm okay with Pringle, but I am worried about Hardman as the Chiefs' number two wide receiver. Sammy Watkins, a free agent, doesn't look like the Chiefs are interested in bringing him back, at least not for now. He's a free agent still looking for a team. Juju Schuster of the Pittsburgh Steelers got a one-year, $8 million offer from the Steelers. The Chiefs offered $8 million plus up to another $3 million in incentives. So he could have made $11 million instead of $8. He chose the Steelers' cheaper offer. Also, the Ravens offered him 1 year, $13 million. That included incentives. And Schuster churned them down as well. Once again, you sit here and you say what, as a Chiefs fan? Well, you're crazy, man. You could have made more money and could be the Chiefs, and you got a better chance of winning a ring. Juju was drafted by the Steelers, has relationships in Pittsburgh, and obviously wanted to stay there if things were pretty close. And apparently they were close enough for Juju Schuster to take a one-year, $8 million deal. All right? He's also on the Steelers right now, would probably be their number two receiver behind Claypool. On the Chiefs, let's be honest, he would be the number two wide receiver, but he'd be the third option. Josh Reynolds from the L.A. Rams, very tall, very athletic, taller receiver. Would I think be a good fit for the Chiefs offensively. He just signed a deal with the Tennessee Titans, and the Chiefs were aggressively going after Josh Reynolds. And so there are people out there sitting here saying, why wouldn't you, Juju Schuster and Josh Reynolds, go to Kansas City? If the money was the same or even better in Kansas City with an offer, why would you not go to Kansas City? I think there is something to this. I read it yesterday. Who does Patrick Mahomes throw the ball to the most? Travis Kelce is a tight end, but he's almost another wide receiver, right? He runs routes like a wide receiver, runs like a wide receiver at times. So, really, you would be the third option in the Chiefs' passing offense. If Juju Schuster joins the Chiefs, Josh Reynolds, or T.Y. Hilton from the Colts, who's still a free agent available, whoever that receiver is, they would be the third option behind Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, which means you may still have decent numbers, but you might not have the big numbers you want to get a big contract if you take a chance on a one-year deal. So when you're Juju Schuster and Josh Reynolds, and by the way, they are taking one-year deals, what you're doing is you're going to try to find the right fit where you can get as many yards and catches, or you think the best system for you to excel, so that after your one-year deal next year, you can get a multi-year, maybe big contract for another team. You go to Kansas City. Do you have a better chance to win a ring? Probably. And you go to Kansas City, and you end up having 54 catches for 748 yards and 6 touchdowns. That usually doesn't get you a gigantic deal. And all you have to do, as an example, is look at Sammy Watkins. Sammy Watkins, you know, when the Chiefs picked him up, was considered a one or two receiver, at worst a two receiver. And granted, he gets hurt a lot. He's injury prone. We get all that. But Sammy Watkins, even when he was healthy, he wasn't he had a few games. He had the game against Jacksonville. What was it, 200 yards receiving? He had a few games where he went nuts. But all in all, on average, Sammy Watkins' normal game was kind of what? 4 catches, 50 yards, right? That's 600 yards a season and 48 catches. That's not going to get you a big contract. I believe that's the story I read yesterday. I think there's some merit to it. I think these receivers that are looking to, not jumpstart their career, but looking for the opportunity to make more money down the line, are not maybe looking at winning a ring. They're worried about themselves financially. And you may say, well, that's crazy. The Chiefs offered more. That's a short-term look. But they're looking at, how can I cash in after I go on a one-year deal? I'm going to pick the best spot for me. If I can be the number one or two guy instead of the three guy in Kansas City, I'm going to go where I can be the one or the two. Schuster's going to be the one or the two in Pittsburgh with Claypool. The Steelers don't have a Travis Kelce at tight end, okay? And Josh Reynolds will go to Tennessee. Corey Davis is left as a free agent. So he would probably be the number two receiver behind A.J. Brown. He'd be the second option in Tennessee. Now, I could argue with Reynolds, they run the ball a lot with Henry. You might not get your numbers there because of their running game. Whatever the case may be, Juju Schuster and Josh Reynolds have decided that Pittsburgh and Tennessee are the fits for them and not Kansas City. So the Chiefs have gone after a couple of free agent wide receivers, and I think there might have been another one. T.Y. Hilton might be one they might still look at. And Watkins, it doesn't look like they're too interested in him unless he's super cheap and available here in a few weeks. He might, you know, take a one-year incentive-laden contract and Chiefs roll the dice with Watkins being healthy, possibly. But the Chiefs clearly are not content with Hardman and Pringle behind Hill on the wide receiver depth chart, and I can't blame them. Top free agents available out there. Emmanuel Sanders is one I really liked. He signed with the Bills recently, so he's gone. So here are the top free agents that they're talking about. Melvin Ingram, who didn't have a good year with the Chargers last year. He's 32 years of old, pass rushing defensive end. There have been some Chiefs fans that have talked about him. Alejandro Villanueva is the starting left tackle for the Steelers. He's started 90 games in a row. It looks like the Steelers are going to probably bring him back now. He's a left tackle, and the Chiefs have a huge hole at left tackle. Maybe the Chiefs are going after him. I don't know. Jadeveon Clowney is a pass rusher who has had injuries. I don't think he's even a consideration of the Chiefs. Eric Wilson, middle linebacker. He's available as a free agent. Sammy Watkins, wide receiver. Austin Ryder, center for the Chiefs. The Chiefs have interest bringing him back, but no deal is done. T.Y. Hilton is an interesting guy. Last year, 56 catches, 762 yards, 5 touchdowns. You know, is that a guy the Chiefs could go with instead of Schuster or Reynolds and offer him a deal to come in and provide insurance if Hardman isn't ready to be the two receiver? And then Russell Okung, he is 32 years old. He's had all kind of injury problems. He's only played in 13 games over the course of the last two seasons, six games in 19, seven in 2020. But he'd be a left tackle, maybe a stopgap measure for the Chiefs, and then draft a left tackle, and then have Okung be with you for a year or two, and then slide into the young guy. Maybe that's an option for the Chiefs. And then Richard Sherman, a corner, is on the market, 33. I don't think the Chiefs are interested in him. And Alden Smith, who's had all kinds of off-the-field issues, a defensive end with the Cowboys, has been suspended multiple times, now 31. He's available. I guess you could roll the dice with him. The Chiefs have rolled dice with guys with some issues off the field before. So if you look at it, the Chiefs' needs here, left tackle, there are two out there that are still among the best free agents available that are still left. Russell Okung, who's 32, and Alejandro Villanueva, who I think might be around 31 or 32 as well. I'd have to look that up. So There are a couple left tackles that are still out there. Maybe the Chiefs would go after one of those, or perhaps the Chiefs would move somebody they have on their team, like a Joe Tooney, who they just picked up in free agency as a left guard with the Patriots, move him to left tackle, and draft a guy to be the person they want to be at left tackle and groom him and turn him into that. Maybe Lucas Niang is the answer at left tackle, and that's what the Chiefs are going to do, and Rimmers will be at right tackle. I don't think so, but Chiefs still have a hole at left tackle, and they also look like they want to fill a hole at wide receiver. So far, they haven't been able to fill either one of those two voids, and I think they could maybe find a guy that could fill the void at wide receiver in the draft, possibly, but I don't know if they can find a starting left tackle in this draft because they're drafting late in the first round. So I think the Chiefs are still going to get a veteran of some kind to come in and play left tackle, but as of now, the Chiefs still don't have that position filled.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.